Hey, this is Jeremy Roenick, and guess what? You guys are listening to the Jim Bob Show.
Hey, this is Wayne Larrabee, and you're listening to Roar on WGN.
Hey, this is Jim McMahon, and you're listening to the Jim Bob Show.
I had to pop a beer for this one.
Attaboy.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Brian Urlacher, and you're listening to the Jim Bob Show.
That's awesome. Oh,
and
that's
then,
it.
How about one? This is Brian Urlacher. I'm not a bitch.
No.
That's I about, love that one.
Half the coaches in the league. The Mondays were the worst. And that's when you really got tested, when you came off a tough loss. You got into the office on Monday. You found out two more players were hurt. You didn't realize. The sky's always fallen in the NFL on Mondays.
Chicago's been a great sports town. They're hungry for people that play hard. And if you play hard and win, they love you forever.
720 WGN high atop Chicago in the Skyline studio. It is the Jim Bob Show, game day edition here and on great stations around the country. And Jim Bob, this is a guy that you've known for a long time. He has done it all, from the playing to the coaching to the broadcast side. He has insight into all of it.
Yeah, and I will tell you, sometimes I listen to him and I'm thinking, oh man, maybe he's a soothsayer. And then I take his advice and I go, dang it, he's not a soothsayer. But I've got my buddy Rick Neuheisel, former coach, former player. You know, he's on your television show every Saturday and he's on your local Sirius radio. I mean, my buddy, what's up, brother?
I am doing well, but you left out my biggest accomplishment in life, which is to be the wingman for the one and only Jim Bob Morris back in the USFL days in San Antonio.
He was my wingman, I'll tell you what. It's, we had some fun. We can't talk about it on the air. You'll have to read Jeff Perlman's book, The USFL, and it tells a lot of good stories. We had, by the way, Rick, we had Jeff Perlman on the show here a couple months back, and he was reminiscing about writing that book about the USFL. We had a lot of fun with him.
Jim Bob qualified it as it was a true crime novel, right? Football for a
Jim
fun.
Bob's story. Jim Bob's story could go to True Detective. There's no question about it. Jim Bob had more fun than he deserved. I promise you that.
We don't want to keep you too long because I know that it's inevitable. Every day you've got a golf match here, and so we want to get right into it. Let's talk. I tell you what, I was at a function last night, and I had provided some money to this charity function here and local. And I went to it and had some local representatives from the different universities, and they were all talking. And as soon as I walked back, I go, hey, Jim, I want to talk to you. And they wanted to talk about NIL. And I think it's just a timely subject. I mean, you know, I wanted to get your thoughts on Chip Kelly leaving UCLA. And the rumor was, man, it's just so hard to navigate through these NIL waters and the portal waters. I think today being a coach, Rick, is one of the hardest things you can do as a head coach with the NIL, with the portal. I mean, this would drive Coach Wooden at UCLA crazy. Your thoughts on the whole picture on the NIL side?
Well, there would be some that would say Sam Gilbert was the first NIL guy at UCLA when Coach Wooden was there.
That's correct.
But listen, I think every coach out there, myself included, believes that the players should be getting a piece of this pie. College sports are an unbelievably entertaining enterprise. Television ratings say so. We're the number two sport in America, only trailing the NFL. So as the numbers keep going up, and just look at what the SEC teams and the Big Ten teams are going to get per season, and you realize how valuable it is, then the players should be part of it. But the NCAA, not wanting to give any pie, decided it was the best thing to do to just say, okay, let's let you transfer. That doesn't cost us anything. So now we've got transferring, and then the name, image, and likeness thing went in front of the Supreme Court in the form of what the case was, the Alston case, and they ruled unanimously. And think about the Supreme Court today. They don't say anything's unanimous. It is always 5-4 one way or the other, red or blue, right? But at the end of the day, they say unanimously the concept of amateurism as conceived by the NCAA is outdated. This money is such that they have to share. So now all the guardrails that these committees worked on to try to create some rules regarding name, image, and likeness have been put to the wayside. As a matter of fact, Jim Bob, there's a case right now where Tennessee and Virginia are basically suing the NCAA saying you can't keep name, image, and likeness from being part of our incentive practice to have somebody come and be a part of our school. And in so doing, they have now got a situation where the judge has ruled in these states' favor, saying that name, image, and likeness is completely legitimate as an incentive to bring kids to school. So the NCAA has frozen all their cases, meaning that they're going to lose them all. And so the NCAA literally is on the verge of extinction as we now know it.
Yeah. I've been saying that for years, in the fact that it's overextended its stay, you know, but go ahead. I agree with that. I think that everything that you said makes sense to me. I think back to the coaching, you know, running and managing the portals. Do you think, for example, like Chip Kelly leaving UCLA, and the rumor was, hey man, you know, this is a lot of obligation on managing the portal, managing NIL. I got Oregon money up here with Phil Knight. And do you think there's some of that behind some of the decisions of these coaches? And let's throw in, you know, Nick Saban in that too. I mean, I heard that Nick, who I don't know if you remember that, but Nick was, you know, he was my coach when I went to the Houston Oilers. He was a defensive backfield coach. Not everybody knows that. And I kept in tabs with him and everything. And what I heard was, when he did the end of the season meetings with, you know, the key players, you know, he met his key players for, it was coming back for next year. And they usually talk about, hey, you know, here's your positioning for the draft, or here's what you ought to be doing, or here's what you got to work on. But I guess the overwhelming majority was just discussions about NIL money and how much they were going to get. I'm wondering how much that played in his decisions as well, of trying to manage that, because that's a very different game when you're managing as many players like Alabama would have to manage to keep those guys in the current position of just reloading like they do every year. Your thoughts?
There is no question that impacted Nick Saban's decision. I heard it was 8 players waiting at his office to discuss NIL deals that had been offered while they were away at the Rose Bowl, and wanted to know if Alabama would match the offer. And Nick said, I just can't keep up with this. This is ridiculous. And if you think about what Nick Saban can do for college football in his new role as a game day guy, he's going to have a voice that no longer is just Alabama's voice. It's the voice of college football. So I'm excited about his venture going forward, and I think it can help. He and Herb Street together can help solve some of these issues and get the universities off the dime about not sharing. At the end of the day, this is going to require collective bargaining. And one thing is, or the other, is going to happen, Jim Bob. Either the schools are going to collectively bargain, or the schools are going to sell their licensing rights to a private equity, and they will collectively bargain. It's the only way for college football to go forward, given the enormous popularity of the sport.
Well, you look at the NCAA and the fact that their role, it's like everything, whether it's coaching, whether it's college football in general, or the NCAA, that life as we knew it is going to be completely different. So what does it mean for those guys that have obviously have their careers completely banked, the easy transition into a broadcast booth, and they're going to be just fine going forward to be a successful program? Is it just a whole different thing? Do you need a separate entire part of your coaching staff that just manages all of these different contracts and opportunities? Or does somebody step in and make sense of it all? I mean, we all agree they should make some money, but it seems it's just wild, wild west at this point.
Well, once we collectively bargain, we can put rules in place that they'll have agreed to, because they'll have taken the money, and in agreement for the money, the subsidy, whatever it is determined that they'll get. Now we can put rules on transferring. We can put rules on, you know, what your academic requirements are. We can do all that. And it all will make sense, just as we did before. But we have to share the money. We have to. And I think people are coming to grips with that. They're trying to figure out the economics. You know, these athletic departments proliferated over the years because they had all this excess money. So give you an example. In the mid-70s, UCLA's athletic department consisted of 8 people. Now it's 168 people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Wow.
You know, so because they had all this money that they just kept giving an assistant to an assistant to an assistant. And ultimately, we're going to streamline that, whether it be the departments themselves or the private equity groups that will find great interest in being the owner of the Florida State Seminoles or the Ole Miss Rebels.
Yeah, you and I talked about that when we were having discussions about our involvement with the Washington Redskins minority ownership team, and then the Spring League discussions.
The Commanders, Jim Bob, the Commanders.
But with the time, I know. Remember, everybody, I'm Native American. I can basically say or do whatever I want to. But
you're the only guy. Yeah, you're the only guy that can get away with it.
I mean, if we're, like I tell all of my friends, I go, if we're talking reparations, ones. I would like mine first because, you know, my great greats were here. I think I deserve it. And I need the money. But anyhow, no, I think you're exactly right. And, you know, we've talked about this. A guy that has money and, you know, you can't get into the very closed loop of the NFL. And, you know, being a minority owner of an NFL team like you and I discussed, probably not the most fun thing, but, you know, fun for some. But being able to go and have a football team that, you know, you basically have so much control over, if you give a program and you can get in relatively inexpensively. I mean, for $5-6 million, you can own a program from the NIL standpoint, not everywhere, but I mean, you're not going to own Texas A&M for that. But I mean, you bring in something like that to a Kansas State, a KU, you know, guess what? You now are officially, it's the Jim Bob Morris Jayhawks, or honestly, I mean, yeah, and you're right about that. That's where I think we're going with this stuff. And it will be private equity or very, you know, wealthy and big billfolded owners, you know, individuals.
I wanted to get your thoughts too, Rick. You know, you look at the Pac-10 and just how it is completely dissolved. And just, you know, what college football is, you know, so much of it, I think the appeal is that history, the legacy, the traditions, right? And when you have, you know, the Big Ten becomes the Big 35, right? And then everybody's just sort of chasing money. In the end, those individuals, maybe those schools will benefit. But what does it do to sort of break down that, you know, the fiber of the fan base of really the sport itself?
Well, it's up to the sports and those who are leading, the commissioners right now, Sankey and Petitti from the SEC and the Big Ten, respectively, to restore faith in the enterprise once they decide what the enterprise is going to be. Certainly, we're undergoing all kinds of changes. Mac Brown said there's been more changes in the last 3 years of his career than the previous 35. So once they figure this out with the new CFP, with the new television deals, with realignment, and Florida State has a lawsuit trying to get out of the ACC, which would lead to the departures probably of Clemson, Miami, North Carolina, Virginia. I mean, once we get to the finish line of all that, then it's important that whoever's leading this crusade shows the American college football fan base that this is all going to be good, not only for the fans so that we have what we all of these have loved, but we also have compensated the players in a fair way. And we keep education as a goal, not just a, you know, something we thought about years ago.
Yeah. I'm going back to the UCLA deal. I'm not for sure if you're bypassing the question intentionally, but in regards, because it's your old school. But, you know, I thought when Chip Kelly left, he was leaving because he was going to take another NFL job. Now, because of the changes out there in the Pac-12 and the Big Ten and UCLA, Chip Kelly goes to Ohio State, which, by the way, UCLA is going to have to play. How do you think his strategy worked in here?
Well, there's no question Chip was fed up with what was the new way of recruiting. Now, it benefited him, to be honest, because he was not what you'd call a heartwarming fireside chat recruiter in homes for freshmen. He ended up using the ability to go get transfers like Jake Bobo from Duke and, you know, others to come and be a part of his program, which was an easier UCLA than it was for freshmen because of the academic restrictions. So he benefited, but he didn't want to play that game anymore. He wants back in the NFL, and Ryan Day was his ticket to get that done. So it's not surprising that he did it. The good thing Chip did is he got all of his assistants' contracts, my son included, so that there's some security with the kids that he left behind. But it was it's a strange deal. But he's not alone. Jeff Hafley left Boston College for the Green Bay Packer defensive coordinator job.
Yeah, surprise to me on that.
Kane Womack left South Alabama to go be the defensive coordinator at Alabama. Maurice Linguist left Buffalo to go be on the offensive staff at Alabama. So these head coaching jobs are not all they're cracked up to be, given all that you have to manage, especially now with collectives.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Let's switch our attention a little bit, and we got a few more minutes here. Let's talk about the NFL draft and Caleb Williams. You know him well. You've reported on him a lot. You've got, you know, the first three positions. You've got Drake May out of North Carolina. Brandon. You got Jaden Daniels out of LSU. I mean, those three quarterbacks. And what do you think? We'll put you on the spot here. What do you think the Bears are going to end up doing? Because it's still a mystery to me, and we're supposed to have the pulse on it. And my advice was, hey, however you can do it, you've got the first and the fifth picks. Get Marvin Harrison Jr. and go get Alt to the left tackle out of Notre Dame, or that kid out of Penn State. And now you've got two positions taken care of with that. And then you know, you still got some, you probably got some additional room because somebody might give you some additional picks on that Caleb Williams play. Your thoughts on what's going to happen?
I think they've already made up their mind. I think they tipped their hand a little with the naming of Shane Waldron as their coordinator. Because as you study Shane Waldron, and I think came from the Seahawks, there wasn't a lot of quarterback run in his background. And if you were going to keep Justin Fields, you needed to get somebody that has background in the quarterback run, because that's giving Justin Fields all the equipment he needs to be the successful quarterback that I think everybody thinks he can be. But you have to force defenses into the box. Jim Bob, as a former kind of hybrid linebacker safety, you know what an eight-man box is.
Yeah.
And you have to be in an eight-man box when a quarterback's a running threat. Yeah. Because now the running backs create extra gaps. And in so creating extra gaps, if all you're doing is playing against, as a quarterback, single high safety, which is basically cover three, more of a prevent, three deep, five under, or man, now you basically can have your cake and eat it too from a running game standpoint and a throw game standpoint. But Waldron doesn't have that background. So to me, they've made up their mind that Caleb Williams is going to be their guy. They're playing a song and dance right now. But my guess is that Justin Fields will be on the trade block, and that Caleb Williams will be the new Bear quarterback.
Well, here's the deal. You've got one, and then they turn around and they get five. And I don't think Marvin Harrison lasts to five. I think the Cardinals pick him up at four. And I think then they're going to pick up the wide receiver out of Washington, which isn't a bad play either. You know, that kid can play. I just love watching. This is the time of year I love watching everything come together with the combine. And, you know, I talked to Bill Polian and talked about, you know, how much emphasis they put on that combine and so forth. And it's great because you get to compare so many matrices of what this guy did last. You know, it's hard to look at the combine and go, hey, you know, Tom Brady at 46 ran a faster 40 time here a week ago than he did when he ran the combine coming out of college.
Listen, the combine is wonderful. We call it the underwear Olympics, and we get to, you know, admire all the athletic ability that the kids have. And it's remarkable. And they've been working at it for like 3 months.
Yeah.
These guys have been training for this. But what its true value is from a compare and contrast deal.
Yep.
Because you get opinions on guys. Like, for instance, let's say you see a running back that reminds you of Marcus Allen. And then all of a sudden he runs 4.6 at the combine. And as you look at that, you go back and you say, Marcus Allen ran 4.6. We don't have to worry about this. This guy can be Marcus Allen. So it allows you to make defenses for players you really like. It also allows you to showcase unique athletic traits that maybe, even though the productivity in college wasn't exemplary, it still was the kind of athlete that's going to project very well at the NFL level.
And with those activities, it's an apples to apples thing, right? So you can compare them instead of against.
Exactly. That's why they don't change the drills.
So
they want it exactly as it was.
Rick, we wanted to ask you, and maybe this is one of the last questions, but you know, you talk about Justin Fields, everybody agrees, you know, incredible athlete, amazing, can do certain things. But, you know, the Bears weren't able to maximize that in a number of years. They weren't able to showcase that. In fact, if they're going to, as you project, going to make a departure away from him, he's on the trade. Like, we know there's some value, but it takes like the right, like you mentioned, like the right coaching staff, the right team, the right outlook, the right mentor. You know, there's a lot to this, right? He's not a plug and play kind of character. What teams would be in the market for a Justin Fields?
I think the Pittsburgh Steelers should be the team that goes and gets him.
Yeah.
Now, the Atlanta Falcons have a team that has that kind of same ability, and they're not dead set on a quarterback. I wouldn't be shocked that they got in play.
Yeah.
And the Tennessee Titans would be another one. Yeah. But the Pittsburgh Steelers, to me, with a run-first mentality, the steel curtain defense, to me, it fits their personality. They've got in it with guys like the big receiver from Georgia, Pickens there. He's going to get a lot of one-on-one opportunities. I think it would be magical. And remember, Pickens and Fields were together at Georgia for a time, so they'll know each other.
I think
that would be my choice.
I think the Falcons are going to take Jaden Daniels from LSU, and you get a Fields-type player there.
Very much so.
So yep. I don't know that there's a play there for Fields. I think that gets closed up on draft day, but who knows with the trades and everything that's going on. I think that where they're, but you know, playing quarterback back in your day and so forth, is that have you paid enough attention to look at the draft and see, were there any surprises at the quarterback position other than basically, you know, the big three that we talked about, which was, you know, Williams and May and Daniels. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of other guys there, but anybody surprise you?
Well, the one thing that's happened, you know, because of COVID, we've had more eligibility. So guys like Bo Nix and Michael Penix got 5th years and 6th years of eligibility. So they get so many starts now that I think as you look at Brock Purdy at the 49ers and what they've accomplished, you know, with him as the quarterback, because he had over 40 starts at Iowa State, that people are going to look and say, you know what, we're going to take these guys. Yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised that both Nix and Penix are taken in the first round. Because you get the 5th year on him.
You and I talked about that, and I said, hey, Brock Purdy, every time I watched him against Kansas State, he disappointed me because he beat us. I was disappointed because the guy had like 46 starts, and I think that's a real play there with these extra years these guys are getting. You know, another big pick in the draft that I'm excited about is that, you know, I love Brock Bowers, the tight end out of Georgia. I think he's going to end up, I think he's going to go, and he's going to go in the top 12 or 13, and I think maybe Denver picks him up. Speaking of Denver, Russell Wilson announced that they're going to release him, pre-cut dates. They're going to take a big hit on the cap. Where's he go? You got Fields, you got Russell Wilson. I mean, these are a couple guys. I mean, Russell Wilson's got a pretty – I'm not for sure what happens with that $252 million extension. He gets cut. What's this mean in regards to – I mean, it's a big cap for the Broncos, but what's it mean for somebody who's got to pick him up?
Exactly. You know, and all that will be – negotiated in the trade, although that he's been released now, I think it's free to the new buyer. All that weight is on the Broncos because it's a release rather than a trade. It'll be interesting. You know, the Steelers will be in that market. Baker Mayfield hasn't signed with Tampa yet. I don't know if that's been decided, so it might be someplace like that.
Yeah, they had to get Evans signed first, and he signed a new deal, which he deserves, man. I'll tell you what, Mike Evans has always been one of my favorites, but I think they had to get Evans signed first, and they'll probably get Baker. I would think that they're going to get him signed up. I mean, I can't see them letting him go. To me, he was the most improved player in the NFL.
He seemed comfortable and he seemed happy. And obviously they were a playoff team and had a playoff victory. So you've got to think that they're going to give him another look and another trip around the sun. But always fascinating when talking about quarterbacks, is it not?
Oh, man.
Always fascinating.
Well, I tell you what, another fascinating moment here with Rick Neuheisel on our show and the Jim Bob Show with Dane. And buddy, I tell you what, I don't want to keep you from, I know you're probably waiting, bated breath on the first tee. We're going to let you get to it and hopefully you shoot better than 70.
They're only halfway down the fairway.
Bomb one on them, buddy. Hey, have a good day. Shoot sub 77 today. I wasn't happy with that 77 number. Come on, man. We can do better than that today. I'll catch up with you next week, brother. Appreciate it.
I appreciate you, boys. All right. See you guys.
Thanks.
Take care.